So it's going to be a challenge for me today to stretch this out into two and three quarter hours, but I'll do my best. Now, it shouldn't take too long to do the counts, of course, but I want to make sure that everyone understands the chi-square test of goodness of fit test. There's actually many different types of chi-square tests, not just the two that are mentioned in the workbook, but the chi-square goodness of fit test is the most used of all of them because it's pretty versatile. What is it, though, that is true of your data if the goodness of fit is eligible? It's what type of data do you use it for? What has to be true of your data to use the chi-square goodness of fit test? Remember back in the first week when we talked about kind of a dichotomous key aspect of determining what kind of statistical test you use? What was that first question you should ask yourself about the data? Well, we have time. I could play that recording. The first question you should ask is whether your data are, what you're measuring is categoric or continuous, right? What does that mean? Right. Right. Color is a good example of categoric variables, right? You know, color is either red or yellow or blue or whatever. It's not in between. Whereas if it's a numerical value between 0 and 1, like you said, there's no neat boxes where one leaves off and the next one starts, right? So for that, the chi-square tests, the two that are in the workbook, contingency test and goodness of fit test, are both for categoric type things. And that's why it's appropriate for today's, because you have categories that your counts are going to be placed into, right? Either, how many categories? Three. What are the categories? Correct. Right. Now, some of you might already be totally clear on the chi-square formula, but I'm going to go through it anyway. Because if I ask you, is everyone clear on it, everyone's going to say yes. If I were to quiz you on that, many people would not be so clear on it. It's some statistical formulae look very arcane, and you say, okay, I believe that's the formula. I don't care about really what it means. Chi-square formula is very understandable. I'm going to force you to realize that it's understandable. But what we have as the formula is chi-square equals what? It's in words, chi-square would be the sum of the ratio of the squared variations, the squared deviations from expectation to the expectation itself for each of several categories. All right. In symbols, that would mean sigma notation. It's the sum from I equals 1 to n. In other words, for n different categories of the ratio. So I said, as I said, so that's going to be a fraction. Observed sub I minus expected sub I, quantity squared, 2 or divided by E sub I. Okay? Here O means observed, the actual measurement, in other words. E is the expected value. And the I subscript notation just refers to observed for that category or expected for that category. For N different categories, right? And you can use this for 2 and up. So we have three different counts we're going to make today, right? That's why we have three boxes, three categories we're using. But just to put some sense into it, well, before I put some sense into it, notice I said that in words it's the sum of the squared deviations from expectation. The deviation from expectation is simply the difference between what you actually got and what you expected. O minus E is the deviation, right? When you square that, that's the squared deviation. And it's the ratio of the squared deviations to the expectation, which is why E is on the bottom. But why is it that we square the deviations? To prevent negative values, right? Squaring them forces every value to be non-negative. Could be zero or positive, but never negative. But why is that important? It's important because of this sigma. What's the sigma tell you? You're adding them together, right? And if you have negative numbers and positive numbers, they, when you add them together, they can undo each other. Right? For instance, if you have a set of three data, 1, 2, and 3 are your measurements. If you expect it to be 2 in every case, and you actually get 1, 2, and 3, right? What's your observed minus expected for 1? It's 1 minus 2, right? Which is -1. 2 minus 2 is 0, right on the expectation. 3 minus 2 is 1. If you add those together, -1 plus 0 plus 1, you get 0, which implies that there is no deviation from expectation at all, right? 0 means you're right on the prediction. Well, you weren't. You had deviations from expectation. It's just that since they were equal and in opposite directions and you summed them together, they negated each other. That's why you square the deviations first before you add them up. -1 squared is 1, 0 squared is 0, 1 squared is 1, therefore they add up to 2. That tells you that you did have actual deviation from expectation. That's the importance of squaring it. Everyone clear on that? Okay, so just to operate this thing, I know you can just put it into Excel, but that doesn't really teach you why this thing is the way it is. It's good to use a familiar example. And one of the best examples of categoric data is the results of rolling of dice, or one die. In the simplest case. So if we use a standard cubic die, a six-sided die, we have 6 possibilities, right? And therefore n would be 6. 6 categories, right? We can take as many measurements as we want. In other words, we can roll the die as many times as we want, or roll as many dice of the same type as you want. It would be the same thing. So let's say we roll it 100 times. What are your expectations? Well, the categories are rolling a 1, rolling a 2, all the way through rolling a 6, right? Those are the categories. And notice each measurement is just an integer. It's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, or 6. That doesn't have to be true for chi-square test in general. But the categories have to be non-overlapping. They have to be mutually exclusive. So every measurement is in one category or the other, not in two at once. Okay? In other words, you're never rolling a 1.5 in this example. So you have 6 categories, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6 as measurements. And then you just actually roll it 100 times and mark down what you got each time. Those are your data. A bunch of integers, 1 through 6, in some in no order, right? But how do you figure out what your expectations are? That's the important thing for actually using the test properly. What would be the expected value, the expected number of ones if you rolled this thing 100 times? And if you assume that it's a completely fair die, in other words, there's no more probability of rolling any number than any other number. 1/6 of 100, exactly. Right? You'd expect there to be exactly a 1/6 chance every time of rolling a 1. And therefore, if you do that 100 times, all of which are independent from instances, you'd expect there to be 100 divided by 6, or 1/6 of 100 ones. So the E's are computed based on the nature of your test, based on the nature of your experiment. Okay? What would it be for 2? The same exact number, right? It would be the same number for all of them in this case. You could also, though, use this for in a genetics experiment, for instance, right? If you have a dihybrid cross, anyone not take genetics yet? Everyone here is taking genetics? Okay, good. So in a dihybrid cross, what is the expected phenotypic ratio?
Of course,
we'll have to. Dihybrid. 9 to 3 to 3 to 1, right? That's what the Punnett square tells you should be true in a dihybrid cross, right? You should have 9 that are doubly dominant, 3 that are dominant recessive, 3 that are recessive dominant, and 1 that is recessive recessive for the 2 different characteristics, right? Well, you can actually do a real dihybrid cross using real organisms. And if they make a sufficiently high number of offspring, then you can get meaningful data that you can then use a chi-square goodness of fit to test for. The test statistic itself is determining whether there really is a significant difference between what you really measure and what you expect. Now, if you roll 100 dice, or if you roll the same die 100 times, even though you expect exactly 1/6 of them to be ones, they're not going to be, right? For one thing, 100 divided by 6 is not an integer. But you're just not going to get exactly the same number of 1s, 2s, 3s, 4s, 5s, and 6. The simplest case is if you roll it once, right? You expect there to be 1/6 ones, 1/6 twos, and so on. You're going to get one number and zero of all the other 5 possibilities. So this indicates the value in having a high sample size. You roll it 1,000,000 times, and you're going to get damn close to 1/6 of 1,000,000 ones, 1/6 of 1,000,000 twos, and so on. The higher your sample size, the better there is going to be fit between expectation and observation. And the test takes that into account by paying attention to degrees of freedom, right? Well, degrees of freedom and sample size both come into play here, I should say. Now, what is the degrees of freedom for the chi-square goodness of fit test? I don't mean particular, I mean in general. Degrees of freedom equals what for chi-square goodness of fit test in general, as displayed here? N minus 1, exactly. One fewer than the number of categories you have. And so today, once you do your counts, it will be 2, as you said, because you have 3 categories. All right? Well, the chi-square itself, the chi-square statistic, is not going to depend on N, right? The chi-square statistic is a number. Whether that number indicates a significant difference from observed versus expected or not depends on your degrees of freedom. So the p-value that corresponds to a certain chi-square statistic, that is sensitive to the number of degrees of freedom. That's why you have to look up the critical value of the chi-square statistic for the appropriate number of degrees of freedom you have. All right? And that's why in the write-up for today, which is talking about your specific example, it says the p-value corresponding to or I mean the critical value corresponding to 2 degrees of freedom, which is what you have, is whatever it was, 5.991, I think, something like that. You can get it from a standard chi-square table, though. Or if you're using Excel, it will spit out the p-value automatically. Now, the p-value is really what you care about, right? Not the value of the chi-square statistic itself, but the p-value is based on whether or not that chi-square statistic is above a threshold value or not. Now, which is it that makes the difference? Is above or below the threshold statistically significant? Above, right? Why does that make sense based on this formula? What can you say about a large value using this formula? What's true the larger the value is? Not necessarily. Not necessarily larger because of this square. No, the expected is a constant that you've computed already beforehand. Okay, think about just the fraction. What makes a fraction big? The numerator is big or the denominator is small, right? Well, the denominator, like I said, is constant here. E is constant. The only thing that depends on the data is the one that has the O in it. So the only way this fraction can be big is if the numerator is big, right? What's true if the numerator is big? Exactly. It's not necessarily that the observed is greater than expected. It's highly different from expected. It deviates from expectation. It could be much smaller or much bigger than expected. In either case, O minus E quantity squared is going to be big. Now, looking at it from the other side of the coin, a value of zero for chi-square means what? It means that every category you got or observed exactly what you expected, because O minus E would have to be zero for every category for this whole thing to be zero, right? So the smaller the value of chi-square, the greater the likelihood, probabilistically, that there really isn't any real difference between what you got and what you expected. And if it's not perfectly what you expected, it's within reasonable distance from that expectation based on what your sample size was. Okay? And based on the degrees of freedom. That's where the critical values for each different degree of freedom come from. It depends on the actual distribution. Were you going to ask something? Okay. And were you going to ask something? Okay, I thought I... Okay. So, practically speaking, yes, you can just put it into the Excel workbook to get your p-value, but calculating the actual statistic, which wouldn't tell you the p-value, it would just tell you the statistic, would be an easy matter today, right? You're going to get... What is your e going to be? How are you going to calculate before you even count? How are you going to calculate... Well, I shouldn't say before you count. Before you run the statistic or calculate the statistic, how are you going to calculate E? No. It's... Well, what... Let me back up a little bit. What are you actually counting today? Seeds that have germinated. Right. And the expectation is not that every one of them is going to germinate. That's not what we're testing. What we're testing is whether there's a difference in the treatment, right? What are the three treatments? Or the three categories? The control, which is distilled water, lettuce additive, and brittle bush additive, right? So if there, the null hypothesis is that there is no effect of a treat in treatment. which would mean that you would expect to have exactly the same number of germinated seeds, the same fraction of the total number of seeds in that category for every category. Does that make sense? Well, how would we figure out what E is then, though? That's not the same as saying that every seed should germinate. The control is used, but so are the other two. For there really not to be any difference means that there is, for every category, you would have the same as the mean for everything, right? That's why the expectation value, in this case, is the same for all three categories, and you compute it simply by counting all the germinated seeds, irrespective of category, total all of them, and divide by the total number of seeds, which would, I guess, would be 150, right? So the total number of germinated seeds divided by 150 is the mean for all seeds. Therefore, if there isn't a difference for treatment, you would expect the mean of you would expect that same fraction to occur for each of the 50, right? If you express the mean as a fraction, which would be number of germinated divided by total number, that just tells you the expected fraction, right, overall. So what would E1 be? Well, there's a couple different ways we could do this. We could even think about it in terms of fractions and just do it as the number of germinated seeds total and just divide that by 3, right? Because we would, that says the same thing, but it's less complicated mathematically. If we add up all the germinated seeds, divide by 3, that means we're allocating equal amounts of that total number of germinated seeds to each of the three categories, which is the same as saying there is no difference for treatment. And so that is probably how you should do it. It would be mathematically equivalent to do it the way I started, but no need to do that. Okay? So whatever the total number of germinated seeds is divided by 3 is what E1 should be, what E2 should be, and what E3 should be. They should all equal each other. And that's what you need to make sure is in the expected column of your Excel workbook when you run the chi-square test. Make sure the E1, E2, and E3 are equal to each other and that they actually equal whatever the total is divided by 50. So every group will have a different E1, E2, and E3, but every single group will have E1, E2, and E3 equal each other. Right, because every group will have a different total number of seeds germinated. That's why your E's will differ. Okay, so hopefully it makes sense to you then if you have a huge deviation from total divided by 3 for one category versus another, then this chi-square statistic is going to get big, right? And if it gets big enough to be over the threshold value for 2 degrees of freedom, then that statistically means there is actually a significant difference in these categories, which means the treatment must have done something. It's this wouldn't happen by chance very easily. That's what statistical significance means. There's always a chance it could happen randomly this way, but it gets smaller and smaller the bigger this chi-square gets. And therefore, you're more and more justified in saying there truly is a difference. The bigger this chi-square gets, and correspondingly, the smaller the p-value gets. Okay? Everyone clear on all that? All right, let's count.